direct. From Guano Productions headquarters in the Los Angeles Underground, it's time for your new favorite podcast, The Superiority Complex. It's like honey in your ear holes.
Welcome to the Superiority Complex. Is that a question? Okay.
We're starting strong.
You know what? This board.
Blame the board.
No, I can't. No, I was about to say I can't figure this thing out.
Which is blaming the board.
The start of the sentence. What's the subject of that sentence? I can't figure out this board. What is the subject of the sentence? Is the subject of the sentence the board?
Sorry, I'm not going to argue with an English major.
I wasn't an English major. I was a history major.
You minored in it or whatever.
No, I was going to. And I figured out that's a lot of writing. Either way, not a lot of money to be made. Good choices. Well, we're here again. I'm here with my beautiful wife, my lovely, I don't know. You know, you're the love. Today you're going to be the Watson, the lovely Watson to my Sherlock Holmes, because we're calling this episode.
Because they were gay. I'm sorry, I just had to.
Now, there's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with it.
Obviously, we don't want to bring in any of our prejudices into the. But personal prejudice. Well, I'm not prejudiced, but my wife is.
So. What?
You're from Arizona, dude. It's in the blood, it's in there. It's deep in there. So, what was I saying? Oh, we're going to call this episode The Games Afoot. And the reason we're going to call the games afoot is because we are going to be in our nerd life here. And thankfully, my wife here, she's with me on the ground floor on this one. As of a few months ago, we've really started getting into tabletop gaming, you know, playing board games. And I consider myself a gamer, and my wife brought up the fact that she thinks it's weird that there's other you had never really thought about the fact that there's other gamers or
To me, gamers were video game like video Xbox, game. PS3 type people,
or you know, people who play World of Warcraft.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't even think I thought of that as gaming. Like, I didn't think of them as gamers.
Like tabletop gamers.
Yeah, I just. You know, Dungeons and Dragons people, I didn't think of as gamers.
Yeah, I think that, I think video games have kind of supplanted that as far as.
Yeah. So when you would say gamer to me, that was my.
Yeah.
Solo.
And in all honesty, that's the way I meant it. You know, I meant it. I use the term gamer to mean something that is someone who plays video games or, you know, does that type of. Thing which I love. I'm a huge video game nut. One of my other many expensive hobbies that I tend to. I can't get into anything that just is. You know what? Although I will tell you this for the replay value so far.
Yeah.
And we'll go further into it. Tabletop gaming for tabletop gaming is a very formal term. We'll just say that we've been playing a lot of board games lately.
Yes.
Board and card games and. Just a little background. We've always loved things like Scrabble. We used to play Scrabble together a lot. We break up the Monopoly board, play Risk, Stratego, all the stuff that you would get. You remember growing up as a kid. We had all those board games when we first got married. And then, you know, you have the party games like Taboo or Catchphrase or, you know, Pictionary. You have those. And, you know, everybody loves those games. And I think... last year for Christmas, last year for my birthday, somebody gave me apples to apples, and we took it around, played it at Christmas Eve. We had some people over. We took it over to Christmas Day at my mom's, and we had a blast. Everybody had a blast playing, and it was something that everybody could play. There's Apple to Apples Jr., which we like playing with my daughter. So we were well versed in those types of games, but it would be like a rare occasion where we'd be like, you know what? There's nothing else to do. Let's break out the Monopoly board. I almost said let's make out. And that's something that you and I can definitely do, which is fantastic. So I suggest doing more of that.
Wow.
Okay. And making
move along.
So
inappropriate.
Recently, it is a family show. But we're husband and wife making out. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't really call it making out after you're married, though, do you?
I don't think so.
What's it called?
Move on.
Nuzzling? Are we nuzzling like the two Mutos in Godzilla? That was the giant insect equivalent of "This is where we first met," which is my least favorite line from one of my least favorite movies. Anyway, in the recent past, we picked up a game thanks to our nephew Joseph, a game called Kitten in a Blender. Mm-hmm. Kitten in a Blender is a really great card game. Very, very simple. You basically have a deck of cards that are either blend cards or blender or stop cards, and then you have kittens, and then you use the table and a cardboard box that the cards came in, and that is it. That is the entirety of the game, and you're trying to save as many of your kittens while blending as many of your opponent's kitten. And we took this game to Hawaii with us, and you'd think, well, why would you want to play a game like that in Hawaii? Well, we were traveling with our child and another child and four other adults, and we were all staying in one big suite in the hotel. So there were going to be times where we were all together, and we needed something to kind of pass the time. And
yeah.
There's nothing worse for me, at least when you're traveling, than just sitting around and watching TV when you're, like, on vacation. It's like, I could have done this.
And at the resort, things kind of rolled up fairly early.
Yeah, we were at the Disney Resort in Hawaii. Like, free plug for the Disney Resort in Hawaii. But we've talked about it on the show. We went to the Disney Resort, and everything on that side of the island kind of really around 9-10 o'clock, everything was done.
It's done.
So there would be nights where we would be up late, you know, and you know, wanted to have something to do, and you know,
we'd play kittens in a blender,
and everybody loved it. The kids loved it. I think your mom played a couple hands of it. Everybody really, really enjoyed it. So from there, and another influence we had was obviously coming here and doing the podcast, and before that, doing the podcast at Undercity One, because we had. There were a lot of games that I'd see that were interesting to me, or they had like theme games. Like I think I brought home like Doctor Who Monopoly or something like that. And that kind of breathed new life into that whole thing. And then, you know, they have a bunch of themed Monopoly boards like Marvel and things like that. So, but Kitten in a Blender really kind of opened it up to like, you know, there's a lot of cool games out there that I really have never tried out. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, everybody I think likes playing board games. But I think the problem, and we'll talk about this more, is the type of games you see when you walk into a place like Undercity, if you're not into tabletop gaming, can be overwhelming because they're huge. The boxes look huge.
They're size wise. I mean, I think there's a fair amount of really small card game boxes,
mm-hmm.
but it's not what you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
It's not what you're going to see when you go to, you know, Target or, mm-hmm. you know, any other big box store that's selling board games.
And I will tell you this, there was some controversy on our page recently as to whether or not, because I bought some multi-sided dice and I put a picture of them. And I said, you know, we actually bought the multi-sided dice to use in a game called Smash Up, which we're going to talk about. And we used them as score markers. And I put a picture of them and I said, my first multi-sided dice. I'm officially, you know, a nerd. And then, if I wasn't a nerd officially a long time ago, I don't know what it's going to take. But I was never into things like Dungeons & Dragons. I never played Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm going to admit something, really. When I see the boxes and I see knights and dragons and stuff like that, it bores me. It really bores me. Like, it's a turnoff. It to me, like that's just the person I am. But
all have our preferences.
You throw a cover of something like Axis and Allies, which I played I remember playing that in high school with our friend Dan had that set, and I remember watching him and his brothers play. But it was so complex compared to the games I was used to that I kind of went in there with that type of mentality that these games are going to be so complex that they're not even fun, you know, and I just thought it's hours and hours of setting up and doing things like that. Now, I will say now that you realize that, you know, you should, I mean, apparently you can't teach an old dog new tricks because you shouldn't judge a book by its covers, not to mix metaphors there. But yeah, I would come in and see these games and be like, oh, that doesn't look like I'm going to enjoy it. Or you know, that box doesn't look very, I think what you're right. A lot of these boxes, lack the flash of like, hey, look at this Monopoly game that we're going to have, and it's going to have an electronic bank, and you're going to love it. You can use ATM cards instead of money, but you're still going to be frustrated 3 hours in and want to murder somebody because, you know, they just you can't get them to trade, you know, Park Place or whatever. So we really uncovered this world of games that, unlike Monopoly, and I'm slamming on Monopoly, but, you know, any game that gets people to sit down together and have, you know, some time with one another, you know, gets you to put your iPhone or, you know, your iPad down for a couple minutes and just talk to somebody face to face. Any of that is good. So we're not trying to slam any of that type of game. And if that's the only game that you're familiar with, that's great.
Yeah.
You know, continue to anything that, you know, anything is better than, oh, I'm going to play a word and pass it, you know, pass my phone to my friend. No. Don't be lazy. Get out the Scrabble board. Sit down and have a conversation.
And spend the money and get the Lazy Susan one.
Which we have.
Yes.
And it's nice.
It's nice. Because it spins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's lovely.
But I just, okay, so what we want to do is that's like 10 minutes of just me rambling, and I apologize. But we're basically just trying to give you the background of where we are as far as. So as far as a hobby, this has only been a few months for us.
Yeah.
And we've really picked up a lot of these games. And if you're interested more in tabletop gaming, there are three resources I want to send you to. Number one is there's a web series by Will Wheaton, King of the Nerds, King of the Geeks, Will Wheaton. I think maybe Chris Hardwick could, you know, battle him. I think they're in the same weight class as far as like nerdiness, geekdom. But Will Wheaton, you know, everyone thinks of him from Star Trek. I think of him from Stand By Me. But Will Wheaton has a web series called Tabletop. And what he does is he gets together with people who are usually internet famous or friends of his. And they'll play some games. They'll sit down and do a whole playthrough of a game, and they edit it down to about 30 minutes. And this is a great idea if you see a game that you know, you walk into a store, and some of these games are starting to turn up at places like Target now, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But if you see a game, say, like King of Tokyo, which is a blast to play, and you're not sure if you want to – look, Target sells it, I think it's $35 or $40. It's not a cheap game.
Yeah.
Considering how little comes in the box. But that's $40 of, like, serious replay value. Mm-hmm. So you think, well, I'm going to drop $40. You can watch Tabletop and watch Will Wheaton and his friends sit and do an actual playthrough of the game. And they edit it for time, but you can tell right away if it's going to be a game that you think you're going to like or not. And he does a little five-minute setup at the beginning of each episode, and he'll just walk you through the game. And next thing you know, and there's boom. There's absolutely no time. They introduce everybody, and they're playing, and they're showing you, you know, how each of the cards works and what each roll of the dice does. And it's really, really great to see just these games being played as a demo.
Yeah, and we've used them as a reference point to, like, I don't quite understand this rule.
Mm-hmm.
How did they play it? How did they interpret the rule or whatever? So that's been it's been a really good resource.
That leads me to my next resource. There's a gentleman, I believe he's Canadian. His name is Rodney Smith, and he has a great web series called Watch It Played, and you can go to watchitplayed.com and check it out, or just go to YouTube, type in Watch It Played, and we used Watch It Played to do a tutorial of a game called Boss Monster, which we're not going to get to talk about today, but it is a blast and it is awesome. And Rodney plays the games with his son, and I believe once in a while with his daughter, but his tutorial was the best. And I showed my wife the setup, and she goes, oh my gosh, this is so confusing. And I said, just wait, because he's going to start playing the game. And they take the time, they show every step. He shows you the table. He shows you the layout of the cards. And so that is a great resource for some of the more complex games, because I've noticed that some of the games that they do on Watch It Played are a little more of the complex variety. But he is a perfect host because he seems so patient and so nice. And it's really great because I like it because as a dad, it's really great that he's playing with his kids. And so that's really what I'm hoping to get out of this too, is just, you know, our daughters played some of these games with us, and some of them are just things that my wife and I like to play head to head. So that's another great resource. And then if you just want a general knowledge of, also I think you can follow Watch It Played on Twitter. Will Wheaton is Will W, and he posts stuff about Tabletop on his Twitter. And they're working on a season 3 right now. I think they're getting it funded. But there are 2 seasons worth. I think there's about 20 to 30 games you can see them play. And a lot of them you're going to hear mentioned later on today. The third source I would say is there's a podcast, and these guys are a little bit more deep as far as the games that they play. They have a knowledge of literally hundreds and hundreds of board games, and that's a web series and a podcast called Dice Tower. They're three gentlemen who, if you just saw them on the street, they look like they would fit right into the black hole at a Raiders game. They look like if you're sitting on the end zone. They don't look like your typical or what someone would imagine a board game enthusiast to look like. But they definitely have serious knowledge of games. And I think because there's three of them, you get a nice cross section concerning some of the games. And so I've just been able to watch some of their top 10 lists, and it's really helped me make some good choices. So those are three resources before we jump in. So what my wife and I decided to do was we took 10 of the games that we've been playing a lot, and these are games that were unknown to us at the start of the year, I would say.
Yeah.
We didn't know anything about them in the last, I would say, last month, really.
Really, the last month.
We really just want to share them with some folks because we think this is something that we're really getting into. We're having a lot of fun doing it. We're doing it together, and our daughter can, on some of the games, can join us. In other games, she really has no interest, and that's great. It's something we can play after she goes to bed or when we have a few minutes during the day. We've actually worked in a couple of these games where we kind of see each other in passing and have, you know, 15, yeah. 20 minutes. It's like, hey, let's play a quick game. And it's really done a lot for us because I think we both have the tendency to get kind of zoned out by technology. You know, we'll be watching TV or we'll be in the same room. One of us will be watching TV and one of us will be on the phone, you know, playing a game or, you know, I'm playing Boom Beach or something. This is really something where we've really worked on. It's really helped us to kind of get together. So it's been nice. So here we go. We're just going to do a general list. We're going to talk about 10 games. I have no order of these, Nicole. I didn't put any of these in order.
Okay, whatever.
Do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about your favorite game first? Your least favorite game
really
first?
Really don't. I mean, I don't have a favorite.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Let's talk about my least favorite. I don't know where it falls on your list. And this doesn't mean it's a bad game.
Yeah.
You know what we'll do before we start the list, honey? Let's take a quick break just so that way whoever's listening can kind of stop and decide whether or not they want to listen. This is a bonus episode. It's going to be shorter than our normal episode. But still, we're not getting to the games until 20 minutes in, so because I'm long-winded and a blowhard. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will go over these 10 games, and we'll try to do it quick. But what we want to do is we want to give you an overview of the game, let you know what we think of it, some highs and lows, and some difficulties you might find, and what's great about the game. So we will be right back after this break. Hey, that was a good break.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good drum break. What's that from?
Sublime?
No.
No. No. Oh, God, I know what it is. I can hear
Beck.
The song in my head.
Two turntables and a microphone. Where it's at. All right. So we are back, everybody. That was like such a pregnant pause. I was waiting for you to keep going and say something. I look over and you're just stonewalling me. Okay, so we're going to talk about some of our games here that we like, and these are the 10 that we feel. These are 10. We actually have more games at home that we played last night. We play tested last night, and they were
all like our first 10.
They were all great. They were all really good games. Wasn't it? So, honorable mention, another game that I want to just bring up really quickly that we have not played together, but I played with Isabella. And this is a game that really opened my eyes to the possibility of tabletop gaming. It's a game called Star Wars X-Wing. And Star Wars X-Wing is a strategy game you play on a tabletop. There's no board. You just use your tabletop, and you roll your dice, and you have these little awesome Star Wars models. So that I'm already on board. But it's just a fun strategy game. You're basically just flying around the table and trying to blow each other out of the sky, and it is super, super duper fun. So Star Wars X-Wing Miniature, I'll go into that. Maybe one day you and I can try playing it. I think you'd like it now. You know what's funny is this really – I forgot how competitive you can be. How competitive you can be, and you are – you win most of these games handily. So I want people to know that right away. She is a formidable opponent, and I'm at the point now where I used to be super competitive, just to ask my wife how I was with miniature golf. Oh, and I'm at a point now where I just really enjoy playing the games. I'm just having so much fun just hanging out and playing these games that it's just super fun. So I don't even care that I'm not winning. I wish I could impart that to my daughter because she loses once and then she's like, meh. I don't want to play this anymore. So the least favorite of these games, and again, these are games that you can find. And we'll let you know where you can find these games. Some of these games you can find at Target now.
Yeah.
But there's a card game that they carry here at Undercity, and Victoria, who's sitting outside right now, is the one who recommended it to me. And it's called Hammabi. And Hammabi is – the best way to describe this game is it's basically solitaire for two people. But the trick is you never see your own cards.
Yes.
You have a hand of – you're trying to build – you are a pyrotechnician.
Yes,
in ancient China trying to build
a fireworks display.
And so there are different colors of fireworks and there are different numbers of fireworks. So just like in solitaire, you're trying to put the suits down in the right order from highest to lowest. You're trying to lay the cards down. And you show your hand to a person, the other person, and they're allowed to tell you –
One thing
about the card. They can either tell you the color or the number, and then they can imply – you can tell people how many you have. Like you have three red or you have two threes or these two or threes. You can point to each card individually. But each time you take a hint, there's a little token. You have to play the token, and once you run out of tokens, then you have to start discarding cards to get the tokens back. And if you discard too many of the right card, you'll never finish the fireworks display. So the only reason it's my least favorite is because if you are my wife and I and you, we can get frustrated with each other so easily sometimes. And this game definitely, it's these little tokens. And there's the thing is, if you mess up three times,
Game over
because there's a fuse token that just you tick off after every time you mess up. And this game is $10. You can find it at hobby shops a board game shop or whatever. You can probably find it on Amazon for even cheaper. But it's $10, and it would be really, really – I'd like to see it with four players because with two players, it was fun. And it's cool, but there's a lot of tension in the game.
Yeah. You know, it's – blue. It's
so great seeing a couple who's been married and then we're mad that we're not picking up on each other's signals.
Well, I thought you were saying it was like the wrong blue or it was, yeah, it was.
My wife loves it because I have no short-term memory whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. I forgot what you said. Did you say this one? I'm like, oh, mother of pearl. Organize your hand after I tell you you need to know.
And then I was mad at you for doing the same thing at the very end because I told you, these are fours, and then you got rid of one. We needed the four.
Yeah, I got.
So the game is called Hammabi, Hammabi. And it's a lot of fun to play. It was $10 here at Undercity Cards. But a very creative game for what you can do with just a deck of cards. Really, really creative. And again, it's that element of like not seeing your own hand.
Not seeing your own, yeah.
Another game that we found, and this was thanks to the guys on Dice Tower. I'm sorry, I dropped my pencil. Give me something to write on, man.
Focus.
Anyway, nobody? All right. got it back. I'm hot for Hiddish. Okay, now, there's a thanks to the guys at Dice Tower, I found a little game. It's a bidding game, and it's called For Sale. And this is a super fast, quick little game.
Real quick one.
Really quick. You can play it. There's two phases. It's a real estate trading bidding game. It's basically the card equivalent of flipping houses. You get two decks. One has cash value, and one has properties. Mm-hmm. So the properties all have a different value assigned. There's all numbers, like a mansion will be like a 25 and like a outhouse will be a zero. And you play with three or more players and everybody bids on these houses that you want to buy. It's like an auction. So if you see a house you like, you can bet like one of cash tokens that you're going to use to bid on the houses. And of course you want to get it. You want to buy low and sell high.
Yep.
And the mechanic that really makes things interesting is the fact that if you decide to pass on a bid, you automatically get the lowest. You automatically get the lowest card.
Yes.
If you have bid no money on it, you get it for free.
Yes.
So if there's three like nice properties, you can get away with murder and save your money for the next one.
Or if there's three crappy properties, there's no point in putting out money for it. So it's like, you know what, I'm just going to pass
if,
right now.
If you do decide to bid and you feel like it's getting a little too rich, you can pass, and then you'll get in order of who has the least amount of money on the table. They'll get the lowest. If you have some money, you'll get the second, then the other person wins the bid. But if you take a pass and you've already got money down, you get half your money back. So you can kind of play it. Then once all the properties are sold, and there's only maybe 15 or 20.
Something like that.
Once all the properties are sold, you take whatever money you have left over, you get your properties, you shuffle them into a hand. Everybody holds their hand. Then you lay down three money cards. There's three different values of money, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, whatever. And what you want to do is you want to lay the card with the most value down, because that money is going to go towards your final score. So highest value gets the highest amount of money. So there's a certain strategy there to it, because sometimes you want to kind of steal. If it's not worth a lot of money, you don't want to sell one of your higher products. So there's this, but the whole game takes maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, we played it twice with Isabella, and I mean, maybe the first one took 15 because we were trying to figure it out and trying to coach her through it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was really quick.
Really quick, really fun. And for people that like things like Monopoly and that kind of thing where you're trying to bid, or you know, you're trying to buy properties and all that, if you like that bidding element of things like that, this is the perfect game for you, and it plays fast. It's a really tiny game too. It's, you know, a deck of cards and some tokens. So a lot of these have a really small footprint. So if you're looking to add stuff to your game cabinet, these are really good games.
But we talked about too, these are good for taking with you.
Yeah, and that's the game I'm going to get to next. For Sale is another really good one. So check that one out. And I'm sorry, you know what, guys? I didn't do my homework. I should have the name of the publisher on some of these, or the name of the game creator, because some of these guys, they're like comic book creators.
Yeah.
And they get very famous for creating a certain game.
And there's European games versus American games.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we get to one of our...
There's like a whole thing.
Yeah, there's a whole world.
Did not know
existed
beyond Monopoly.
So we have another game that we like to call, we really love, and this is simplicity itself. For those of you who like dice games, and I think this is going to appeal to gamblers in the, there's a game called Zombie Dice, and Zombie Dice is one of the games you can now find at Target. They sell it. So where the board games are, they'll have all the cards and stuff hanging on hangers, you know, the little hanger
like
things.
Like Uno
and all
where
that
you find
stuff.
Those type of games.
Zombie Dice is sitting right there, and it's $12 at Target. You play a can. There's a can with dice. And what happens is the dice have three options on the dice. You have brains, because you're playing the role of a zombie. And you want to have as many brains as possible. You can have, there's a footprint, which means somebody ran away and now you have to catch them if you want to eat their brain. And then the third side is a footprint. A shotgun. It's a gun blast. It looks like a bang in a comic book, so like bam, like out of the end of one of those gag guns that the Joker would carry around. It looks just like that. So on your roll, what you want to do is collect as many brains as possible, and then
take three dice out at a time.
You always roll three. There's I believe seven in the can, or how many? No, there's 13 in the can. And so, but here's the thing: the green have, I think, one shotgun blast. The yellow have like two or three.
Two, and the red have three.
The red have three. So if you roll red, your chances are higher of getting three. Once you roll three shotgun blasts, you're out.
It turns out, you didn't get any of the brains.
And you lose all your brains you've collected. But you can stop your roll at any time. You can slow your roll. So if you roll five on the first time, but you get, you roll two and then you get two more, but you get two shotgun blasts, you're like, okay, I don't want to risk it. Those brains are now yours. They count towards your final score. So you want to have some kind of mechanic, pennies or something to be able to keep a score. Just keep it.
There's a pretty simple, you can download it. It's free. It's the Zombie Dice Counter.
Yeah. But this goes in a little cup. It's the size of like a large coffee cup. Not even that size.
Not even that.
Maybe probably a medium.
Like a half of a Pringles container.
Yeah. And you can carry this around. I have it in my bag right now. And you can play this anywhere. You can roll dice. So you could be. It'd be great to set up a game like in an alleyway, so it looks like you're shooting craps, and then just have somebody come by and, you know, we're playing zombie dice.
You could play this on a plane.
On a train.
Yes.
Could you play it in a box?
You could.
Could you play it with a fox?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Depends on the intelligent quotient.
Well, you know, what does the fox say? These are the worst jokes I've ever done in the whole history of the show. So I apologize if you're a first time listener. First time, long time. Anyway, so Zombie Dice is a great game that you can carry around with you. And this will appeal to anybody who's not a gamer. If you talk to people about board games and their eyes just roll back in their skull, this is the game for them because it's a push your luck game. And everybody loves it.
Are you going to go for more brains and risk getting the shotgun blast? Yeah,
don't wuss out. Also, this is a great...
The winner is whoever gets to 13 brains first.
Yeah.
And then after somebody reaches 13, everybody rolls again to see if they can beat...
Yeah.
Without getting the shotgun blast, obviously.
Super fun, super quick.
Super quick.
Super quick and readily available, so check it out. Zombie Dice is the next one. Mm-hmm. Next on the... And these are all ones that... I kind of broke it up into stuff you can play quickly.
Okay.
So some of these, we're not going in that order, but I just noticed that I'm kind of doing that. Another one that you can play, well, this really depends because the rules change. And this is one of my favorites that we found that I had never known. Apparently, this game is a game that was designed by two NASA engineers. So, you know, those engineers, thinking like engineers. There's only one constant rule in Flux, and that rule is that you start out the game by. The only rule is there's three. You draw three cards at the start.
Mm-hmm.
You draw one from the deck at the start of your turn, and you play one. After that, once the game starts, that's it. The first round is the only one that has that concept because in your hand you have cards that are keepers. That keepers help you meet the goals. There's goal cards in there. The thing is, anybody can change a goal as long as they can play that card at any time. Anybody can change the rules at any time. They can change the number of cards you have in your hand. They can change the number of cards you have to discard. They can steal cards from you. There are creeper cards that prevent you from winning as long as you have them. So each of the decks they're different. We have two of them. We have three now.
Three of them.
This one is, if you want to just give a game a try, you can also buy this at Target. It's in the same area as Zombie Dice. And it is... half price if you buy it at Target. The game shops that I've been to, they usually charge about 15 to 20 bucks for each deck, and they're all themed. There's Star Flux, which is what we have, which is a sci-fi theme. There's Pirate Flux. There's Wizard of Oz. There's Cthulhu. There's Zombie.
What was the one I saw last night? Monty Python.
There's Monty Python.
Like, that would probably be pretty
really fun. And it's just a super quick game. You can carry this in your backpack, in your pocket. You can carry it with you if you're bored.
Yeah, like we talked about putting one in each of our cars so that way if we're out somewhere or whatever.
You're sitting in line, you're waiting in line for dinner. Everybody can hold on to their cards and play. And the deck's a little big and thick, but they're standard-sized cards, so it's fine. And my only complaint about the box you get at Target, it's the Cartoon Network set, which is fine. Cartoon Network, there's a lot of – we have the regular show one, and it's awesome. Yeah. My daughter really liked playing it. The only complaint I have about the box you get at Target is one of those wide boxes, like Uno boxes. So the cards you have to lay in like side by side, and getting them in and out is kind of a pain in the butt. But other than that, it's fine. It's a great game. If I had never heard of it, and it's one of my favorites, we play all the time for just, hey, let's play a quick game of Flux.
And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, let's just play one more.
Yeah.
Because you never know. We've literally had games that lasted 5 minutes. And we've had games that lasted about a half hour.
Yeah. It doesn't usually go more than 30, but it's fun. It's not boring. There's a lot of strategy to it. And it's a fun game to pick up and play with two players. You can play it just as well with two players. So.
And it's just constant, you know, the name states, the rules are constantly in flux. So you're always, you know, you always have to be paying attention. And are we drawing five and playing two? Are we, you know, do we have a hand limit? Do we have a keeper limit? You know, all that kind of stuff. And you're paying attention to what your, you know, opponent's laying down. So when you're laying down goals, you don't want to put something.
Yeah, you don't want
to. If you don't have to.
You don't want to inadvertently give them the win.
There are things where you may have to. There are cards that require you to.
Each deck has different advantages and disadvantages. So, for example, in the Starflux one, there's a hologram projector, which I used to win once because it made a copy of one of. "Quote unquote copy of one of the cards you had on your table, and I needed that card. And once I laid the projector down, I was able to to use your card, even though mm-hmm. I didn't steal it, I could still use it to get the win. And there's a lot of really cool in-jokes, at least in the sci-fi one that I've seen. There are a lot of references to Doctor Who and Star Trek and Star Wars.
And, yeah.
and there's one really great card called The Expendable Crewman, and he's wearing a red shirt, of course. And if you have him out on the table, then if somebody tries to mess with you, the Expendable Crewman takes the hit. So it's just things like that, little in-jokes like that. And it's really, really fun. It's a super quick game. Anybody can learn it. You learn it in a minute because there's, like, again, the set rule is you draw three cards at the beginning, put the cards down, you know, and then draw one and play one as you go on. That's it.
Yeah.
And then the rules will change. So Flux is a really, really good one. Easy to find. It's everywhere. But they do – most game shops will carry it, but now you can find it at Target, which is also awesome. Another really quick game. And this is a really, really one thing I didn't think about was just the artwork that goes into some of these games.
Yeah.
And this is a really, really just a beautiful game to look at. And it's so simple. It's relatively expensive. I think it's like $20. It's called Suro, T-S-U-R-O, and the T is silent. And in this, you're basically taking on the role of a dragon. And the board is just laid out, and it's a picture of a Chinese dragon. And on top of the picture, there are all these lines. You know, there's a grid. And what you're going to do is you're going to lay your cards out on the grid. Everybody draws these cards from the pile. You have three in your hand, and you play these cards. And they're thick tiles. And what you do is you lay on these tiles, and all on these tiles are lines, just wavy lines. And what that is a little path. It's a little path for your little marker. You have a little marker that looks like a stone with a dragon carved on it. And what you're going to do is you're going to fly around the board. And the goal is to not hit any of the other players and not fly off the board. So you really want to be the last dragon standing. And it is a game that plays very quickly because it starts out, you're just kind of doing your own thing in the corner. Because you can start out all over the board, wherever you want to start. And you're really trying to avoid the other player at first. And then once the tiles start touching up on one another, you realize that some of these lines. Now, if I play a card and my wife plays a tile next to mine, now her little character is committed to whatever lines are on that card.
Yeah.
So now there's a strategy element to it to try to get
you. Or if I lay down a tile that's in between the two of us, I move, and then you're required to move as well.
That's right.
So it has that little screw you factor
which a lot of people
I've come to enjoy.
Yeah, you do. And there's a lot. We're going to get to some of the more screw you games in a little bit, but at least the in-your-face ones. And that's a big difference between Euro and American gaming, and we'll talk about that too.
It's Euro, you really, you know, once you start closing in, you have to start thinking ahead.
Yeah. But you know what's really nice? It's a quiet game.
Yeah.
It's a very zen kind of game. So there's not a lot of like, and you know, once it gets closer, you're like, oh, you start making these decisions and thinking out loud and cursing your opponent, which is fun, which is always fun. But it's a really just beautiful game to look at. And it's really, really nice. And this is another game I would say if you really want to get into a board game and something that is quick and it's not a lot of setup.
Yeah, it's literally a 5 to 10 minute game as well.
Yeah, at most 10 minutes, at most. So you can play that, get a couple rounds in, and it's a lot of fun. And I'll bet you it's a lot more fun with more players.
Yeah.
We've played with three so far, and that's been really, really good and a good challenge. So Suro is one that we both really liked and highly recommend. So now we're getting into some of the more – I don't quite know where to put this one. This is another card game, and it could go long, and it could take a little while depending on how many players you have. But one thing I want to talk about is like the theme – of some of the games, and this game has such a great theme. If you like, I'm going to tell you this right now. If the Haunted Mansion is your favorite ride at Disneyland, this is a simple card game that you're really going to like, and it's for you. If you know any of the work of Charles Addams, who his work inspired the Addams Family TV show and movie, but that sort of really kind of comical horror characters.
And I think if you like the storytelling and embellishments.
There's definitely something you bring into it. If you like playing apples to apples because you like weaving the story about why should they pick your card or why, which I like to do. I kind of bring that element into that Southern lawyer element into this apples to apples. But Gloom, you each draw these really cool, transparent, thick plastic cards. If you ever have a deck of waterproof cards, they're the exact same material. And on each of these cards is a member of an unfortunate family. And each of these family, your goal is to inflict as much misery on the hand in front of you, which is your family.
Yes.
While
and yeah,
while making your opponent as happy as possible, because yes. once you deal your families out, in the deck are cards, and every time something miserable happens, you take there's negative points on these cards, and you lay them on top of each of the characters, and you want to get as many, you want to go as negative as possible, because you win by having the lowest score. You want the least amount of points.
So you want to try to kill yours. There's untimely death cards.
Untimely deaths. And you, anybody,
and you want to try to kill yours as low as possible. But if you have an opponent who has positive,
yeah,
you can kill them and force them to keep that positive.
Keep that positive. So ruin this. So there's a lot of strategy involved.
Some untimely deaths will cover up all points. So you just kind of die with a zero and it's...
Mm-hmm. You did that to me last time.
Yeah.
And then, but there's a really fun element to it, just because you're telling the story of, oh, well, so-and-so was mauled by weasels, and you're telling the story of why they were, and as you're laying the card on your opponents, you know, oh, look, they got married, 15 points, you know, you get to tell the story.
Yeah.
And it's a really, really fun game, and it's really, really cool, and our daughter was listening to us play and going, what are you guys, playing?
Yeah, I never want to play this game.
But it's called Gloom, and it is a really, did we say that it was called Gloom?
You said it real quick.
Really, really great theme, really, really great packaging. I think it's $15.
Yeah, they have expansions.
They have expansion sets where they can, of course, there's a Cthulhu set, but you can do, there's an expansion set that adds a house to each of the things. So now these unfortunate things are happening to people's houses and things like that. So it's a really, really fun game. Plays in about 30 minutes, depending, with two people.
Yeah.
It'd probably go even faster with four people, I would imagine. But again, I try to keep this to, most of the games we're going to be reviewing are games that you can play with two or three people, just because that's the amount of people we have playing.
Yeah.
There are games that we have at home that we want to review that we're going to wait until there's like more of a situation where we can play. But these are games that you can go out right now and buy and play with one or two other people, and they work really, really good.
Yeah.
So I highly recommend Gloom. Just to have something in your if you just want to get into like the deck element, you know, because there's so many games that are based on cards, and it's really, really fun, and everybody can kind of pick it up, and all you have to do is just come up with the weirdest stories you can.
Yeah, and it's cool. I mean, you don't get points for your story, but it just adds to the fun of it.
It adds to the fun of it, yeah. So Gloom, check out Gloom. Another one I'm going to go into, and I'm kind of like saving I'm not doing it on purpose, but I notice I'm getting as we get to the top, I'm getting the stuff that I really, really dig. I mentioned earlier that I'm not a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan. And if you're not a Dungeons & Dragons fan, but you still like a game where you can screw with people, and this is the ultimate. And this is a really good game for screwing with people.
If it's what I think you were talking about, build your character and like.
Yeah, there's a little.
It's quote unquote armor. Things that you can do to it.
There's a tiny bit of role play element, but this is really a stripped down. This is a game by Steven Jackson. It's called Munchkin. This is another game you can find at Target. There's a Munchkin Deluxe set, and the Deluxe set really only you don't use a board per se. You're using two decks of cards, and what the Munchkin Deluxe set comes with is counters to help you keep track of your level of each character. The point is to get your little Munchkin. Your Munchkin is a little you draw like class cards at the beginning, and you find out what your Munchkin is. Is he a thief, a warrior, a cleric? All the standard Dungeons and Dragons characters, and you want to level this little guy up to 10 points. And the way you do that is there's two decks of cards. There are room cards and treasure cards. First thing you do is flip open a room card. Kick open the door. If there's a monster there, you are now required to fight the monster. If there's no monster, you can what's called loot the room by looking for treasure, or you can play a monster from your hand if you have one that's easy and you know is going to be a pushover, and that's called looking for trouble. Every time you beat a monster, you level up. Now, when you get these treasures, in these treasures are things that can help you, like armor and weapons, and there's also spells that you can cast on other people.
Or monsters, or what have you.
To help you. So as you're going up, you're leveling up, you're finding weapons, you're getting better armor. So your character's getting, your little Munchkin's getting more and more powerful as you climb the ladder towards level 10. Now, if you play with more people, and we only played with three, so we weren't able to really exploit this element, but you can ask people for help and split treasure, and someone will help you because they'll get a piece of a treasure, they might get something they need. Or you can use one of the spells to really hose somebody who's about to you know, level up. You can use that. You can make a monster more powerful, or you can, you know, drop them down a level. Or you can take away something, a weapon they're using.
It's another monster.
It's really, really fun, and it plays really, really quickly because you're just going through the decks and reading the decks. My wife is having problems with her headphones.
I'm fine.
You okay?
Yeah.
So Munchkin is really, really, and it's ubiquitous. It's everywhere.
And there's, again, other themes.
If you're not comfortable, I know some people might not be comfortable with the dungeon element. You're like, hey, man, I don't want to deal with witches and sorcery and all that stuff. There's a cowboy Munchkin. There's a pirate Munchkin. There's, of course, a zombie set.
Which one did we just get?
We got the Adventure Time Munchkin. That was a lot of fun.
That was really cute.
It made everything Adventure Time themed. So if you're a fan of the Adventure Time show.
Yeah.
And you can buy that. That's a standalone box set. Every one of the box sets you can play alone. If you the advantage of buying the Munchkin Deluxe is, again, having a board where you can keep the counters. But you can really do that with there's apps for it. Or you can just do it with a piece of paper. You can just play the decks.
Or they have... those like things where like you can spin the number.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just a counter.
Yeah, or you
like
can
cardboard
use,
counter.
You can use a pair of dice. You can use a pair of dice. Almost pair of dice. Anyway, so yeah, the Munchkin's a really, really great game and really, really fun. It takes all the stuff that I think would have been boring to me in the role play game where you're like, oh, I'm going to put this character in. What's the backstory? Don't care. I want to kill some monsters. That's exactly what
you
get
to
do.
Yeah, you just get right into it.
And it's very funny. The art is really, really cool. The monsters looks really funny, very cute game, and there's a ton of theme decks. And
you know, with like the Adventure Time one, you know, instead of having armor, I had like the purple sweater and a pink t-shirt or a concert t-shirt.
Yeah.
They all have, you know, they add...
elements of the show.
Yeah. And then they add like power to your fight.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, the characters in Adventure Time were really amped up. My warrior in the Adventure Time was way better than the one I got on the
Yeah, but we didn't really know how to play the first time we did it.
So and again, there's an episode with Tabletop where he actually plays with the game creator. So that's a good one to watch. It's Munchkin. So that's really, really good. So that's another one I highly recommend if you just want to get into that dungeon crawling kind of game. Next, we're going to talk about one that I think is my wife's favorite.
It's pretty,
And this is a Euro game. And the difference between Euro style game, when we say that, and it's something that I had to learn, the difference between a Euro style game and an American style game is Monopoly. Again, we'll go back to Monopoly. That is the perfect example of an American style board game. An American style board game is one that your points and everything are red. You know exactly where you stand throughout the game. And so you know when you get to a point where you're just not going to win. And then sometimes like in Monopoly or whatever, you bust out.
Yeah.
And you're an hour into the game and now there's three players that are just going to go on without you. So now you got to go find something else to do.
Yeah.
In a Euro-style game, the turns keep going. Everybody's in the game the whole time and you're getting points and you're not sure how it's going to quite add up. So it's funny because in the Euro style games, the end game is really the end of the game is really the stressful part because you're adding up the totals and you're trying to make sure, oh my God, did I win? Did I do this? And so this is a really good example of a Euro style game that we're about to talk about. And this, along with games like Carcassonne, I think it's Carcassonne?
Something like that.
Carcassonne and Settlers of Catan, which people may have seen. Again, that's available at Target now. These are games that are just kind of like these are the tent poles of kind of this board game renaissance that people had. So about 10 years ago, these games started to appear, I think. But yeah, like the early 2000s. So this is a game called Ticket to Ride. Yes. And if you're a fan of Monopoly, I highly recommend this because it's going to remind you a lot of Monopoly. And Ticket to Ride, you open up the board. It's a beautiful big board.
Yeah.
And it's basically it's a map of the United States, what looks like the United States.
And Canada.
And parts of Canada. Yeah. And there are colored lines all across the map, and you just see different dots to represent different cities. Your job is to build railroads that connect some of these cities. And the way you do that is the game is so simple. It's played with two decks of cards. There are destination cards, and there are train cards. All you're doing, you pick a color of train that you want. If you want to get from, let's say, San Francisco to Los Angeles, that train route is going to be a specific color.
Mm-hmm.
If you have enough cards of that color, you can, when it's your turn, build that section of railroad. At the beginning of the game, you pick what are called destination cards. Those cards show you where you need to build routes.
You take three. You have the option of discarding one.
You can discard one or you can keep them if you think they're going to be good. you get points based on how hard it is to do that route, and they're drawn randomly, and you don't know what the other people have. So you have no idea. So if my wife is doing something over on the Eastern Seaboard and I'm doing some other, we might not, you don't know, it doesn't become apparent until well into the game.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she's trying to get to the same place I am. And there's not always two routes available.
Yeah.
So you have to go the long way. And the problem with that is there's only a limited number of train cars to use. And it's a fun, really good, because you're just kind of mellowing out, you're building on your rail, and it really works. All you do is draw cards. If you don't match, you draw other, you know, then you just, your turn's over. You can play the cards. I'm going to build a train here, build a train there. And the way my wife has beaten me twice is, and this is part of the mechanic that comes into play on the Euro games, there's bonus points for building the longest route. So the last game we played, I actually had my wife beat on, actually, I met all my routes. If you decide to pick more routes, you can. If you have any that do not end up where they're supposed to be, you lose the amount of points that are on
the card. So if the route was worth 12 points, now you got to subtract 12 from your score.
You got to subtract 12 points.
So that's why you got to choose wisely.
Choose very wisely. My wife beat me. She had the longest route, and she ended up beating me by six points?
Seven, I think it was.
Yeah, she got 10 bonus points. I was in the lead, and then it came down to, I think, three or four train cars, but you had the longest route. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you're like, but you have so much fun doing the, just building your little trains. And it's the most simple game in the world, but it's just very, very, you hear people use the word elegance to describe certain games, and I would say that about Suro as well. It's just such a simple, it's simple and it's well played and it's easy and it works. Everything just works so well.
Yeah.
And it's fun to play. The only thing that's a bear about Ticket to Ride is the cleanup, because you got to pick up all the little train pieces.
Yeah.
And there's a million little pieces, but that's one that if you want to kind of branch out, that's a perfect one to get some, you know, get into like that, a different style of game.
And that's available at Target. They have several versions.
That's at Target now. We haven't tried any of the expansion packs, but we know that there are some, that there's Ticket to Ride Europe, which is a full standalone game, but then there are standalone packs like America 1910. There's Africa, China, there's Scandinavian countries, all these different maps. So that's a really, really fun game. It's a little on the expense. So probably the most expensive game on the list.
Yeah.
It comes in close to $50, I think. But I think we got it for $40 or something. We got it with a discount. So definitely worth checking out, though.
Yeah.
And that's a game you can play with the whole family. Little kids can get it. Little kids can get it and pick up on it. And if you have a family, you want to sit down and just, you know.
Yeah.
So really, really cool. The game that I would say that really sold me, there's really two, but the one that really sold me, and a game that really does a theme really, really well. This is a game that we saw at Target, and it's available. And if you see it at Target, I recommend picking it up, although you can probably get it cheaper on Amazon. This is a game called King of Tokyo. And for me, being a sci-fi Godzilla movie geek, it's just super, super fun game come true. You're basically playing as kaiju. Everybody gets a little cardboard kaiju.
Yeah.
The board is ultra simple. You're either in Tokyo or you're not in Tokyo. And the advantage of being in Tokyo is your goal throughout the game is to get 20 victory points. And every time it comes back to your turn, if you're inside Tokyo, you gain a victory point. The problem with being in Tokyo is that anybody who rolls an attack, because you're playing with dice, anybody who rolls an attack attacks you. So if there's three people playing, every one of those attacks they hit is going to take points away from you. And you cannot heal while you're in Tokyo. So it avoids the idea that someone's just going to squat on Tokyo the whole game. The way you get into Tokyo, you have to be the first person to roll an attack and you get in Tokyo. If another person makes you leave Tokyo because of their attack, they automatically become King of Tokyo. And then, you know, you try to stay in as long as you can. The great thing so it's all based on dice rolls. You're either going to roll energy. And if you get energy, that's basically currency in the game that you use to buy cards. The cards in the game give you special power-ups. You're going to roll an attack, which we've already explained, you attack your opponent. You're going to roll a heart, which if you're outside of Tokyo is going to heal you. Or you're going to roll a number. You have to roll three of a kind in order for the numbers to take effect. And what those numbers are is those are the victory points. So if you roll three twos, you're going to get two victory points. The nice thing is every number you roll after that is a bonus. So if you roll four twos, you're going to get three. You're going to get three twos are going to give you 2 points. And then you're going to get an extra point for having the fourth number two. So, you know, so if you roll six of a kind, that's awesome because that's basically 5 victory points and you're like a quarter of the way to victory because you either lose the game by dropping 10 health, you have 10 little hit points, or you have 20 victory points. And there's a really great little I can't remember what game had it when we were kids, but the little scoring wheels. Mm-hmm. And they're really, really cool. So you always know where you are.
Yeah.
You know where everybody else is. And it's easy. The board is set up. The little cardboard monsters are really, really cool looking. They all look like, you know, they're all variations of King Kong and Godzilla and other, you know, giant monsters from your favorite 50s and 60s sci-fi movies. But it's a real blast to play and really, really easy. And there are a couple of expansion sets that really, really make it a lot of fun.
Really added a layer to it.
Yeah, the expansions add like a Pokemon element where you can evolve, quote unquote, evolve your characters, and that they make them more powerful. So it really, really cool. What did you think of King of Tokyo? I'm curious to.
No, I really like King of Tokyo.
Where is it on your list? Is it like the higher end?
It's
the lower?
It's so hard. It's so hard to rate them. I really don't have any that I don't like.
And that's one thing we want to reemphasize. They're all games that we've really had a blast playing.
Yeah.
We've really had a blast playing them all. And there's some that you're more in the mood for at a certain time.
Yeah.
But King of Tokyo is a blast because it's easy to play. Little kids can pick it up and they'll love it because they'll want to play as the monsters and stuff like that. And then you get to roll the dice. Every kid, when I was a kid, that was the best, just rolling dice and just. The dice are a little big and unruly, so have something in there. Like our table, they just fly all over the place. So you can use the box or whatever. That's the only caveat. But really, really fun game. A little on the expensive side if you decide to get it at Target. But again, Amazon or your local game shops, or come in here and buy it at Undercity 2 because support local business. Yeah. I will do that. I will pay for a game full price at a store if I know it's going to support local rather than going to Amazon or something like that. But some of these games are hard to find. So if you find yourself in that position, I'm not going to frown upon it. The last one we're going to talk about, and it just happened this way, and I think because we're talking about themes, this is the. After King of Tokyo, this is the game that really, because I got King of Tokyo after Star Wars. And then she and I played King of Tokyo. My daughter and I played King of Tokyo. And you kind of sat it out. You're like, oh, yeah, that's.
Yeah, I'll be over here.
Yeah, I'll be over here. And the theme didn't grab her right away. But then we started playing a game that I love. And I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's up there and I love playing it. It's a game called Smash Up.
Yeah.
And Smash Up is the idea of a deck building game like Magic. I've never played Magic. I don't know. But like Magic or like, any Dominion or any one of those games. But the theme really knocks it out of the park for me. And what it is you're playing all these different elements of sci-fi character, all these different groups of sci-fi characters. So you have robots or sci-fi fantasy. You have aliens, robots, dinosaurs, wizards, pirates,
tricksters,
zombies. There's tricksters.
You really like the bears.
And then there's expansion packs. There's expansion packs with like cybernetic apes and bear cavalry and steampunks. And what you do is you just take two decks. And each of these decks, there are minion cards and action cards. And all you do is you take two decks, the two decks you think, there's ninjas. I have to think of all of them.
Yeah.
There's time travelers. There's all this crazy stuff. And you take two decks you think are going to complement one another. And they all have different strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
You shuffle the decks together. Your opponent shuffles their two decks together. You lay out a certain number of what are called bases. Each of the bases have two sets of numbers on them. Number one is the break point. So the only things that score in the game are minions. Minions have points in them. They're worth different points. So you drop a minion. It might be a buccaneer or a zombie or an alien scout or a triceratops or whatever. And that minion's now worth points. So now you're going to battle for that card. And so what you want to do is you want to add – you want to be the person that, quote, unquote, breaks – whoa, hello. Sorry. That's the noise you'll hear if you break the base in your head. You want to break the base. You want to get that base to score. If you get to, say, the number's 25, if there's 25 points worth of minions on it, that base is going to break, and the points on that base are going to be divvied up into first.
It doesn't have to be 25 of your points.
No, it's 25 total.
You guys are fighting for.
So there's a strategy, because sometimes you don't want somebody's base to break. You don't want the person to be number one and get whatever bonus they're going to get. And then there's all these things going on in the cards. There's actions you're playing. The cards give you certain strengths. The cards can do so. There's
bases do certain things after turns, after the end.
You really have to pay attention.
Some bases, the second place winner gets more points. than the first place winner. So you really have to be paying
attention. But there'll be a bonus for the first place winner. Like, he'll get to take his most powerful guy and put him back in the deck instead of discarding him. Or there's all kinds. There's a mechanic to it. It's really easy to learn to play, but there are so many strategies. And the strategy changes every time you play.
This is another one that I would recommend watching.
Yes.
You know, if you don't. You know, if you're not coming to our house to play,
yeah,
and you know, or you don't know somebody who knows how to play the game, I would really recommend.
Will Wheaton does a great episode of this
watching this one on tabletop
with Rich Summer from Mad Men. So, you Mad Men fans,
he's a huge board game guy.
Seen him live at Parkcastathon, and he's a huge board. As a matter of fact, at Parkcastathon last year, brought a board game and played it.
And
I think it was called
donated or sold.
Yeah, I think it was called Under Pressure or something like that. I need to look. It looked like a really cool game. But anyway, Smash Up is my favorite. There's so many expansion packs for it. There's another one coming out. They have a Cthulhu set, like every other. Everybody has the Cthulhu set in this. You'll figure out the Cthulhu. I was never a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan, but you'll find out that he is all over board games. Cthulhu's everywhere. There's a Cthulhu set. There's one called an Awesome 9000 set. There's one that's coming out later on in the year that's going to have vampires, mad scientists, giant ants. It's like, you know, 50s sci-fi. There's so many decks and there's so much variety. It's really never going to be the same game twice, depending on who you play with and what they pick. And so it's just a fun game. The games do tend to last a little longer with two people, I think.
Yeah.
I think if we had three or four, it'd probably go a little faster. You and I tend to turn it into these grind fests.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. There's a lot of strategy going on.
And this is the game we bought the dice for because
we needed those markers to score those bases.
Because every time you go to play, you're like, wait, where were we? Let me count this one up again. And it just got to be.
I'm looking at the list, and it's hard to pick a favorite, but it's a toss-up for me between Smash Up and King of Tokyo. Those are the two I enjoy the most. But last night we played a game called Boss Monster, and special thanks to watch it played. We'll talk about that when we get to it. But we had so much fun playing that little game, and that's a great. If you're an 8-bit video game fan, that is an super cool little.
Yeah, it was
little,
cool to look at.
Super cool little dungeon crawling game that we learned. And we had a blast playing that till all hours of the night last night. So
we were up till after one playing games.
So that's it, guys. We just wanted to give you this brief overview of some games that we really really like, and we really want to share this little hobby, crazy little hobby of ours with you. And it's a good way to get people together. I think everybody likes playing board games.
I mean, when we took Apples to Apples it was two other couples and we all had dinner together and you ended up running home and picking up Apples to Apples and the kids are off playing.
Yeah. Cause I don't like talking to people.
Whatever. You love talking. Anywho, we all had such a great time and it was like, when are we doing this again? Like, you know, it's like, it was great. You know, we're all adults, different walks of life and we all had a great time and it really does help. You know, you're not always going to find a movie everybody wants to watch or whatever.
Well, it's been nice for us because I think the move really, we were kind of struggling to kind of get into a routine.
Yeah.
Since we've moved. We haven't really, you know, the house has been in disarray and things like that. And we were really looking for someone, we were really looking for something to kind of anchor us, I think, really. We were, because I'd be up in the bedroom or you'd be in the living room or we'd be here.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a place, you know, there's not a lot of places to sit right now. And
it's like, oh, hey, look, we got a kitchen table.
Yeah, look, now we have a kitchen table. We can all sit there and now we can play these games there. And that's kind of, it's been really nice the last couple of, like the last month or so, really just, and we have these game nights where we're like, let's just play some games.
Yeah.
And
it's been a million degrees. So it's like, you know, you don't want to go outside. You don't want to go to the park. You don't want to, you know, go to Disneyland or whatever. You just stay inside and play board games.
That's right. And it's fun. And it's something that you can do after dinner. You know, you're not doing it, you know, in the middle of the day if you have other things to do. But it's something if you have 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour to spend with people, friends, family, whoever, it's just fun to sit down and be face-to-face and kind of, I think as people who grew up not so much with technology being omnipresent, it's easier for us to kind of unplug, but we're starting to see it in our daughter where she's having trouble just disengaging from. Okay, we had a little bit of technical difficulty. I was saying our daughter who, you know, she has an iPad and she's on the iPad and she has trouble disengaging now. She's starting to get to that point where I feel like we need to kind of
limit the
time. And but so this has been one of the ways that we've kind of said, hey, look, you can still have fun and still like we let's do this. And board games were something that I really grew up loving to play. I remember my cousins had like Hi-Ho Cheerio and, you know, Monopoly was always a big one. And, you know, and then I love playing them. And so, it's you know, there's a social aspect to it. There's a strategy aspect to it. It's good. It feels good to just exercise your brain and do some thinking and kind of, you know, think in ways that you're not thinking the rest of the day. And, you know, come up with some strategies. And then and just like in the case of Gloom, just being creative.
Yeah.
Coming up with stories. And so it really there's a lot of games have a lot to offer. So, you know, this will be an irregular feature. We have some games now that we're working on. We have a game called Forbidden Island and a game called, like I said, we mentioned Boss Monster and we mentioned another game that we played called Get Bit that we're gonna talk about. Those are all really fun, but we just didn't have time to add them to the list.
Yeah.
You know, again, if you want to go out there, any of these games are good if you just want to pick it up and try a game. But if you're a non-gamer, Zombie Dice is a great way to go.
I think Ticket to Ride is a good gateway one too.
Yeah, I would say that if you're already into board games and you're afraid to take the next plunge,
yeah,
you're not sure where you want to go. Like, oh, I would like to try something beyond, you know, Monopoly or whatever, or Game of Life, you know, what have you, like those type of games. If you like that type of game, Ticket to Ride is going to be
right up your alley.
It feels the same. It plays the same. Yeah. And once you get to realize how quickly it moves with the cards and everything, then, you know, it's just such an easy dynamic to play. There's such an easy game mechanic. So you're just drawing cards.
Yeah, it's pretty mellow. Track.
So it's really, really nice. And that's one. But any one of these games, I think at the high end of the nerd scale, it's probably going to be Munchkin. That's going to be, like, I would say, try to, you know, play a few games here and there.
Yeah.
But if you've seen people play deck games, if you've seen people play a game and you're just not sure, Smash Up's a good way to go. King of Tokyo is easy. Like, again, kids can play it. But all of these games I would recommend to you. And do you have any final thoughts, lovely wife?
No, it's been a lot of fun. It's been an adventure.
Yeah, it really has. And we look forward to
Check this one out. And what was that one that I keep? Unexploded Cow.
We keep seeing a game here called Unexploded Cow.
I just keep seeing the box, and it's like we haven't done any research into it or anything, but it's like really Unexploded Cow. Like,
yeah, I like the name. There's a lot of you soon find the game designers have a strange.
Oh yes, they do.
But yeah, so you know,
something there for everybody, age groups, you know, whatever.
And again, the three resources we named, again, you know, Tabletop, just jump on YouTube and watch Tabletop. Tabletop is more entertainment. Watch It Played is if you're going to get into these games and you want to see the actual game broken down to its bare bones. The host does a really great job of just laying it out for you, doing the setup, walking you through the setup. And then, you know, phase two, he'll actually play the game. And again, does nice tight zooms. You can see what he's doing at every turn. Explains everything really, really well. And it really helped us get Boss Monster, and we out of the box we were already going because we had watched him play it. So like I said, if you're really, really deep already into board games, you already know about Dice Tower. I just like it because it's I like getting, you know, different perspectives and watching. That's something Dice Tower, you have to sit down. They do top 10 lists, but it's three guys, so it's 30 games are going over.
Yeah.
So you have to set aside some time to really sit there and get into that. But they have a podcast as well. So that's it, guys. That's going to do it for us. We hope that you took this with a grain of salt, and we hope that maybe you'll enjoy gaming. Maybe nobody will listen to this or just skip on past it. That's fine too. But it's just something we wanted to share in kind of another.
And if you have any questions, you want more information, you can always hit us up
Hit us up on Twitter, on the Twitter feed
or Facebook
at Soup Complex, or on the webpage of facebook.com/soupcomplex. Just hit us up, or, you know, if you have a game you suggest you guys think that we should play.
Yeah, we'd love to hear your suggestions as well.
Let us know. Hit us back and let us know what's going on. So for everyone here at Undercity 2, Victoria, our lovely friend who recommended Hamabi, for my beautiful wife and now my worst enemy, my arch nemesis, of tabletop gaming, the woman I cannot defeat. You won all Boss Monster last night. I don't think I won.
No.
And then we both lost to Forbidden Island. Forbidden
Island.
Yeah,
that's cooperative.
Which is a co-op, which is our first co-op game, which was awesome. That was fun. So for everyone here, and for all those tabletop gamers, everybody else, it's just another thing we're going to end up talking about, and I'm going to run into the ground here. So strap yourselves down and enjoy it, because this transmission ends now.